This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
Compared to the prime years of the baby boomers, the job market for today's young people is drastically different. What do 20 and 30-year-olds need to learn about careers and money management that isn't being taught in schools?
Your job in your 20s and 30s is to find your talent, something you're really good at. In an industry that has a 90-plus percent employment rate, a lot of young people mistake hobbies for passion, and they end up pursuing industries that are just exceptionally difficult.
Then, pharmaceutical drugs are vital for the health of Americans. But recently, supplies have fallen to an all-time low.
Everything from oral medications for attention deficit disorder to local anesthetics to some chemotherapy agents, all of those are unfortunately short right now.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's InfoTrack, right after this.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I gotta change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pinzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $34.99.
Get in zone. And what do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
And I might need some help.
No problem. We have helpful how-tos at AutoZone.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
What seems to be the problem?
Doctor, thank God. My husband found out Cricket Wireless has 5G plans for $15 a month, and his jaw just dropped.
Did he hear about Cricket's blazing fast 5G?
Yep.
Uh-huh. What about their reliable nationwide coverage?
Yes, that too.
Uh-huh. I see. Unfortunately, there's no cure.
Aww.
But you will have really fast 5G.
Get jaw-droppingly fast 5G for $15 a month. Smile, you're on Cricket.
Cricket 5G requires a compatible device and is not available everywhere. Video may be limited to SD. Fees may apply. Terms and restrictions apply. Subject to change. See store for details.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin. And over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. It may increase your stroke risk. Eliquis can cause serious and in rare cases fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. Medications such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
These days, we can all use some financial security, and our next guest has the formula. He is Scott Galloway, author of The Algebra of Wealth, a simple formula for financial security. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Why might the financial advice that worked for our parents not be suitable for us today?
I think kids are facing an uphill battle. I don't think they have the same economic opportunities. Costs are higher. College education has skyrocketed. Buying a home is more expensive. I think people need to think about these things probably earlier than they used to. The bottom line is, it's harder now. And there's such incredible income inequality that your mental health is kind of taken to task, because 210 times a day you get a notification that largely just says you're not doing as well as your neighbor. And the economy shifted. There's just different opportunities in different places. So the world shifted. So you probably shift your strategy.
You know, we always hear the advice to follow your passion, but you say follow your talent. Can you explain that?
Yeah, the person telling you to follow your passion is usually already rich, and they made their billions in iron ore smelting. Your job in your 20s and 30s is to find your talent, find something you're really good at. And this is the key part. In an industry that has a 90-plus percent employment rate, a lot of young people mistake hobbies for passion, and they end up pursuing industries that are just exceptionally difficult. There are 180,000 people in the SAG-AFTRA union. 87% didn't qualify for health insurance because they made less than $23,000. What you want to do is find something you could be out in the top 10% of that industry someday if you make the investment in certification and discipline in an industry that has a 90%+ employment rate. And the accoutrements of being great at anything, the mastery, economic relevance, prestige, camaraderie, being able to take care of your kids and your parents will make you passionate about whatever that thing is. So I wanted to be an athlete when I was younger. I got disabused of that very early. I wanted to be a doctor. I took chemistry. I realized I wasn't right. I wanted to be an investment banker. I was not very good at it. And slowly but surely, I found something that I was good at, that I could become great at. And it was boring. It was analytics. It was strategy. But being great at something and the lifestyle it afforded me and the prestige made me passionate about analytics and business intelligence. You're going to be passionate about being able to take care of your kids and your parents and offer all the enjoy all the incredible things that capitalist society offers. So find your talent.
You devote a section of your book to the concept of stoicism. How can stoicism aid in developing better financial habits?
Well, it's having the discipline to realize people aren't thinking about your stuff as much as you are. And also to try and have some emotional resilience to realize that life isn't about what happens to you. It's about how you respond to what happens to you. And have a little bit more discipline at a younger age, which I didn't have. Develop a savings muscle, even if it's just a tiny bit of money. Everyone has an advantage in investing. You just got to figure out what your advantage is. Young people's advantage is clear. They have time. A 25-year-old is probably going to live another 70 years. So if they just manage to figure out a way to save $100 a week by not having an extra coffee or maybe not eating out one, whatever it is they need to do to try and find $100 a week, take it out of their paycheck, Acorns, Roundup, invest. By the time they're my age, they're going to be a millionaire. And a lot of that comes down to sort of comfort with yourself and not trying to impress others. Don't be the person, you know, drive a Hyundai. Don't be the guy that orders a bottle of Grey Goose vodka at a nightclub at midnight thinking it's going to impress potential mates. Try and recognize that what others think about you isn't as important as you think it is, that you want to take care of yourself. You want to be disciplined. You want to love yourself. And you want to figure out a way to establish economic security with just a little bit of discipline, a little bit of strategy at a younger age. So it probably should have been called discipline, but I called it stoicism. Trying to recognize that it's not as important as you might think when you're younger, what other people think of you, and also their impression of you based on the stuff you have or the kind of the lifestyle you lead really isn't a path to happiness. That's not really the route to self-satisfaction.
We kind of touched on this, but how would you say the concept of retirement has changed as we live longer and our relationship with work evolves?
First off, the only IST that is sort of still allowed in the workplace. There's new ists that have propped up on campuses, unfortunately, new forms of bigotry. But I would argue the only kind of acceptable discrimination in the workplace is ageism. 2/3 of people under the age of 50 are working. It drops to about 1/3 people age 50 to 65. They either get sick or they don't feel like the opportunities are there. And also the mortality rate is never greater, especially for men, in the 18 months after you stop working. So I think a lot of people don't see work as they used to, as this backbreaking physical labor that's a real tax on their health, but it's something they enjoy and gives them purpose or should give them purpose. So I think our society's challenge is to figure out how we create a work environment where older people in midlife and senior life can be more productive and continue to make money, because a lot of seniors are going into retirement without the money they need. So I think we need to rethink work and the intersection between middle-aged people and work. It really is ageist when you think about it. If a 50-plus person, especially a man, walks into a conference room and he's not running the place, there's a general feeling that, oh, he screwed up. There's something wrong. Why aren't you running the place? So I think we need to fight this ageism we have and rethink work and try and figure out opportunities for more seniors to stay productive, which includes more resources for senior care. I mean, a lot of these people have to leave work because they're taking care of kids that are still living at home or their parents. So the kind of greatest untapped resource possibly moving forward might be this wave of seniors. You know, there's just going to be so many of them that still want to work and still have a lot of value to add. But corporate America really discriminates against two people now. Women, once they have kids, they go to 73 cents on the dollar, and seniors or older people. And we need to figure out a way to do a better job with both those groups.
Our guest is Scott Galloway, author of The Algebra of Wealth, A Simple Formula for Financial Security. Scott, the old saying, there's nothing certain but death and taxes. Well, taxes take a big bite out of money. What advice would you have for dealing with taxes to minimize them?
So there's some myths about taxes. There's a myth that rich don't pay their taxes. And What you have is a very progressive tax structure in the U.S. until it hits about 99.5 percentile. So people in the lower medium of income earners actually pay very little federal income tax. The people who kind of get most hurt or screwed, if you will, by our current tax code is what I call the workhorses or super earners. And that is people who make a really good living. Dad's a chiropractor, mom's a partner at a law firm. They make $1 million a year, a lot of money. But it's all current income. And to have that kind of job, they probably live in a city in a blue state. They're probably paying 50 or 54% tax rate. If you can make the jump to Lightspeed and make enough money that you can start investing in assets and become an owner versus an earner, your tax rate plummets. The 25 wealthiest Americans paid an average tax rate of 16% last year. I've been very open. My average tax rate for the last 10 years has been 17% because the way I make money is starting companies and then selling stock and then buying assets and selling them. In the tax code, it's not really tax rates, it's tax codes. Or the tax code, which has gone from 400 pages to 4,000, and it's basically been weaponized by corporations. Corporations are paying the lowest taxes they've paid since 1939. It used to account for 2.5% of the GDP. Now it's 1%. And the super wealthy, who have all sorts of tricks to avoid taxes, whether it's being able to ride off a private plane, mortgage interest, and capital gains. Who owns stocks and homes? Old people. Who makes their money from current income and rents? Young people. So we've decided if you get the gold medal, if you get super rich, we're going to give you the bronze and the silver. In terms of avoiding taxes, there's lifestyle arbitrages, moving to low tax states, Texas, Florida, Wyoming, trying really hard as a young person to create an army of capital that begins working for you in your sleep, because that capital will be taxed at a lower rate than your human capital, that is your work. And then taking advantage also to the extent if you decide to open a small business, the tax code loves entrepreneurs. It's current income earners, people who have a W-2, get a certain amount of money that's all reportable. They get hurt the most by our current tax code. So the tax code has been weaponized by the wealthy and corporations. There's just no getting around it. There's no magic bullet, I would say, other than making the jump to Lightspeed and trying as hard as you can to take some of that precious earned income and turn yourself into an owner versus an earner.
You devote a section of your book to the concept of diversification. Could you talk about what role that plays in someone's financial plans?
Well, you're sort of raised to believe that true leaders go all in on their companies and are highly concentrated in one asset. What I have found is that diversification is a huge component of economic security. And by the way, this is what really screwed me. I had a company called Red Envelope, and I was that guy who I said, you know, how much stock do I have? And they said, 20 million. And I said, how much could I borrow? And they said, 10. And I'm like, great. And they said, what do you want to do with it? I'm going to buy more Red Envelope stock. And when it went bankrupt in 2008, I found myself with negative net worth. Diversification is your Kevlar. Any one stock goes up on average 50.1% of the time on any given day. If you picked any five stocks in the S&P 500 and held on to them for 10 years, no one has ever lost money. Diversification is your Kevlar. It means you can take a bullet to the chest and it'll hurt. You can have a stock do really poorly, but it doesn't kill you. It's not fatal because you're diversified.
Well, the book is The Algebra of Wealth, A Simple Formula for Financial Security, and the author, Scott Galloway. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Next, prescription drugs at an all-time low. That story, coming up.
You're listening to InfoTrack. More after this.
Do summer projects your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can make the most of summer grilling and dig into gardening. Plus, if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like power tools for any last-minute project. Summer your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select and stock items by 4 p.m., subject to availability.
What seems to be the problem?
Doctor, thank God. My husband found out Cricket Wireless has 5G plans for $15 a month, and his jaw just dropped.
Oh. Did he hear about Cricket's blazing fast 5G?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
What about their reliable nationwide coverage?
Yes, that too.
Uh-huh.
I see. Unfortunately, there's no cure.
Aww.
But you will have really fast 5G.
Get jaw-droppingly fast 5G for $15 a month. Smile, you're on Cricket.
Cricket 5G requires a compatible device and is not available everywhere. Video may be limited to SD. Fees may apply. Terms and restrictions apply. Subject to change. See store for details.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. We don't always realize just how much our negative thoughts and experiences stick with us and weigh us down. you may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings, that frustrating thing your mom does, or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ABC Radio today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ABC Radio.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Drug shortages have impacted America's healthcare system for decades. But recently, drug supplies have hit an all-time low. What's causing the problem and what can be done about it? With more, here's InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thanks, Chris. Our guest is Aaron Fox, board-certified pharmacist and associate chief pharmacy officer from the University of Utah Health. Aaron, give us the broad picture. How widespread are prescription drug shortages right now?
Right now, we are tracking the most shortages that we've ever tracked in over 20 years of tracking shortages. Everything from oral medications for attention deficit disorder to local anesthetics that you might need when you get stitches in the doctor's office or even during a major surgery to some chemotherapy agents. All of those are unfortunately short right now.
Most Americans are on one or more prescription drugs. Are these drug shortages common enough that most patients are actually noticing them?
In some cases, yes, absolutely. So one of the most common things is at the pharmacy counter, you may not be able to fill your child's prescription for Adderall. You may not be able to fill your own prescription for Wegovy or Ozempic. These have been short. But again, most of these shortages are also just mostly really isolated into the hospital. And so some patients may not really realize how short some things are.
I think most people understood when supply chains caused all sorts of shortages during the pandemic, but obviously we're well past that explanation today. Is that when these shortages began, the pandemic, or are the roots even deeper than that?
It goes back much further, but I will say a bright spot of the pandemic was that it really did make a supply chain story kind of normal. But we started tracking shortages nationally in 2001. So these shortages are pretty long-standing. Most of the shortages are injectable drugs. They're also old drugs. These are generic products that have been around forever. Things like, you know, lidocaine injection or epinephrine injection. They're very old, very common, but also unfortunately scarce in many cases.
So let's get into the reasons why. What are the factors behind these drug shortages?
Most of the time, the issue is some kind of a manufacturing problem at one of the factories that makes these products. In general, there's usually only two or three companies making these products at any given time. One company usually has more than 50% of the market share. And so if that company has a glitch in their manufacturing process, it could be a quality issue, it could be a supply chain issue, it could be anything really. The other suppliers don't have time to make up the difference. We also don't have, because these are very low cost products, there's no incentive for companies to have, you know, large stocks, safety stocks, redundancy in their manufacturing. And so the other companies can't make up the difference. There's very little resiliency in our overall medical supply chain. And so we end up with these shortages. And once a shortage starts, it can be hard for it to get resolved. And part of that comes from people naturally trying to hoard and buy up as much product as they can. Part of that happens because we don't always get to know some of the reasons why the product is short, how long it's expected to be short, and when it will resolve. A lot of that information is just not readily available from the companies when we're dealing with a shortage.
Our guest on InfoTrack is Aaron Fox, board-certified pharmacist and associate chief pharmacy officer from the University of Utah Health, and we're talking about drug shortages across the U.S. Is it like pretty much any other consumer product that most pharmaceutical drugs are coming from elsewhere, not from the U.S.?
Yes and no. The raw materials, most of those do come from overseas, whether that's India or China. But a lot of the products that hospitals use, and many that are short every day, are actually made inside the United States. So there are drug factories. One just actually had a tornado last August, and that's part of why we had some shortages. Another factory actually closed down last year with a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and that created some shortages. So there is manufacturing overseas, but I think people would be surprised to understand how many things are actually made in the US. So just being made in the US doesn't automatically guarantee no shortages and a very high quality product.
So based on what we've talked about so far, it sounds like these shortages would cross pretty much any country. Other countries are experiencing the same source of shortages?
They are. Canada has their own shortage website. They have significant shortages, and the EU also does. Folks in the UK were worried about that during Brexit, but no country is immune to these shortages, unfortunately.
I think you alluded to this a moment ago, but explain to us why, when there is a shortage of a particular drug, it really doesn't affect the manufacturers much financially.
These are very low-cost products, and the companies aren't making very much money. They're just low profit. So unfortunately, what has happened over the years is companies that are making these products, in order to kind of make it worth their while, they will cut their price trying to gain market share. And so that usually leaves one company with a pretty large market share with a low price. And it's kind of a race to the bottom, unfortunately. So we just end up with very low cost products in that way. And so when there is a shortage, the company doesn't feel any harm to their bottom line. But unfortunately, patients and health systems feel a great amount of harm. And so honestly, the way out of this is we have to figure out a way to improve overall manufacturing quality so that we have a more resilient supply chain. We have these redundancies and backup plans available, and that's going to cost a little bit more. But I think we're going to need a little bit more transparency for buyers to be willing to pay more for these products.
And how can that happen? What are the avenues to cause these changes in the system?
There's a number of proposals out there. Many of them kind of stem from CMS either rewarding health systems for doing a better job and selecting suppliers that are doing a good job with their resiliency and redundancy, to proposals for CMS to kind of punish hospitals for not choosing well. We'll see what really happens. A lot of these proposals do rely on the addition of more transparency so that we can actually figure out which company is worth paying more for and which companies are choosing not to invest in their resiliency for their supply chains.
So for healthcare consumers who are listening and maybe struggling to fill a prescription, what advice would you offer to them?
Don't panic. Know that your pharmacy is trying really hard to access the medicine that you need. It's maybe worthwhile shopping around. If you normally frequent a very small pharmacy, sometimes they actually have better access to some products than the larger stores that might be waiting for a very large back order that a company might not be able to fill, but a company might be able to fill a smaller order for a smaller independent store. It is worthwhile to call around and shop around and be patient.
Erin Fox, Associate Chief Pharmacy Officer from the University of Utah Health. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. It may increase your stroke risk. Eliquis can cause serious and, in rare cases, fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. Medications such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Severe weather can hit any time. That's why it's vital to understand weather watches and warnings. Yet, a recent survey shows many Americans still can't accurately define these conditions. InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco has the story. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Corey Armstrong, the Lawrence L. and Ruth E. Pike Professor in Journalism at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. She holds a PhD in mass communications. Professor, roughly half of the 679 people you surveyed in the Mid-South region, a tornado-heavy area involving parts of Tennessee, Missouri, Arkansas, and Mississippi, could not correctly define a tornado warning. How did people define the warning?
Well, mainly they looked at parts of the definition. So the actual definition is two parts. It's indicated by radar or it's noticed by a trained spotter. And normally people would say someone has spotted it on the ground, but they did not know about the radar part of it, or vice versa. But predominantly those people were saying somebody had spotted it on the ground. So that's normally how they would define it.
Now, you also found discrepancies in how much time people need to prepare when a tornado warning is actually issued, based on whether they have experience with tornadoes. What did you find?
It was fascinating. By itself, the warning time didn't matter, but when we combined it with the people who had prior experience, we saw a significant difference in that people who have had prior experience with tornadoes needed less time, less than 15 minutes. That was the kind of the linchpin between the two. And so people who had prior experience said, I need less than 15 minutes. If I hear there's a warning, I'm ready to go in less than 15 minutes. People who had little to no prior experience, they wished for more time, more than 15 minutes. So it definitely is a, once you've been part of a tornado experience, you have a sense of what it takes and how to prepare, and you're ready to kind of go on a dime.
It does seem to me that in TV and radio markets all over the country, the news or weathercaster people take great pains to say there's a tornado warning in thus and such an area, and people there should be in their safe spaces now. So as a communications professional, are these directions not clear enough?
I don't think that. There is a lot of confusion between what is a watch and what is a warning. You know, as someone who grew up in the Midwest, that is not something that was surprising to me. But I've definitely seen a lot of students, honestly, I'm living in Nebraska now, so we had some significant tornadoes a little over a week ago. And in conversations I've had with students, they said, I just don't know the difference between a watch and a warning. So they're not sure, just to be clear, the definition of a watch is conditions are right or conditions exist for a tornado to pop up, but it doesn't mean that necessarily one will. A warning means just what I said, we've had one, somebody's seen it, or it's radar indicated. So there's a lot of people that are a little confused about that. And if you think about it, it means that's where we see a lot of the people that go out and say, oh, you know, they hear there's a warning or they hear there's a watch and there's a little bit of rain. So they're going to run outside, whip on their video camera and see what they see. And that's what's very concerning, that people would run outside, because that's the time to be in your safe space. Don't record it. Go someplace safe and let someone else record it.
Professor, dovetailing on what you just said, did your study go into what people actually do when a tornado warning is issued and whether they're doing the right things and what those right things may be?
We didn't get into actual events. This particular study was all behavioral intention, as in when this happened, if you received a warning at 3 a.m. or 3 p.m., what would you do? Most prominently, people said they would turn on a media device and try to get more information. But other people said, you know, it could be a radio, could be their cell phone, could be calling somebody, or again, could be running outside and looking at to seeing what they see. But honestly, what we were looking for, and we certainly did see some of this, they said, well, I've been living in this area for a long time, and I know this is what I should do. I get into my safe place and gather my materials, and there I am until we get the all clear. I'll add one other thing just to say that, in fact, one of the other concerns that we've heard, and I know I've heard this over the years in talking to weather forecasters and the like, is people say they wait to hear a siren. Certainly we hear them, but sirens are designed for people out in the fields, people who are not in their house. They are for people that are not near some kind of a media device. So sirens are not necessarily the best cue. They're certainly one, but not the best cue, because they may also be malfunctioning and things like that. So it's a little concerning about the waiting for a siren, because that means you're already probably behind the eight ball on that.
quite a bit to know. Corey Armstrong, professor of journalism at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
That wraps up another edition of InfoTrack. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm your host, Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Mike McKay is back. Wake up with Mike McKay in the morning every weekday morning from 6 till 10 on CFW. Mike has your news and weather every hour and everything you need to know about the fun things happening throughout Eau Claire and the entire Chippewa Valley. Plus, Mike announces your birthday and anniversary shout-outs every morning at 8:15. Send them in through our Facebook or text us. It's easy to do with our free Civic Media app.
Listen in the morning and it'll keep you smiling all day.
Mike McKay in the morning on 105.7 CFW. Crank it up and sing along.
Crank it up.
The Valley's fun music. 105.7 CFW.
Hey, 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 hey,
1057 CFW.
1057 CFW.
Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you I love your precious heart. I was standing, you were there. Two worlds collided and they could never tear us apart. We could live for a thousand years, but if I hurt you, I make wine from your tears. I told you that we could fly, 'cause we all have wings, but some of us don't. Standing, you were there. Two worlds collided, and they could never, ever tear us apart.
Glad you're enjoying the Valley's fun music on 105.7 CFW. Did you know that there's a second brand new station in town? Yeah. When you're in the mood to talk about the local issues that matter to the Valley and all of Wisconsin, you're going to want to tap into our sister station, 93.5 The Tap. For local issues and information, it's 93.5 The Tap. And for the Valley's fun music, keep on listening to 105.7 CFW. Go ahead, spread the word.
Hasta, hasta, hasta. Halfen Garden Center is the place to go. Open all summer long, they offer personalized services and a stunning variety of colorful perennials, annuals, vegetables, and herbs. They offer a wide selection that showcases nature's beauty, like their new American Halo high-class plants and the largest selection of hostas in the area. Located near Lake Wissota on 72nd Avenue in Chippewa Falls, call 715-723-3414 or visit halfengardencenter.com.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help. Anyone can call or text 988 or chat via 988wisconsin.org to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. Trained counselors are here to support anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. You can also contact 988 if you are concerned about someone. 988 is confidential and free to all Wisconsin residents. 988, 24/7. Call, text, chat. Here to support you. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy talking car insurance on today's Work Money Minute. If you don't think your car insurance premiums are too high, well, congratulations. Send your insurance agent a fruit basket or something. But if you're like most of us, you are paying way too much. My top tip to pay less is to shop around. Now, I don't mean Google for 5 minutes, then give up. I mean pick two or three other insurance agencies and go far enough into the application process that you get back real bids on actual policies. That's the only way to really find out who's offering you the best deal. There are a lot of variables. Your age, your driving record, the car you drive. You won't know until you compare apples to apples with real quotes. But is doing all that work really worth the time? Research shows yes, it really is. There could be hundreds of dollars a year in savings for you out there. For more tips on saving, head on over to workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Clouds will increase for your Sunday with afternoon highs in the middle 70s. For tonight, we'll see showers and thunderstorms likely. Our low temperatures will drop to the upper 50s. Some of the rain will be locally heavy. Showers and storms continue Monday. Currently 49 degrees. CFW.
Thank you.
1057 CFW. Mornings with Mike McKay and the best of the 80s, 90s, and more.
CFW.
So carefully, let's start living dangerously.
Talk to me, baby. I'm going up on this sweet, sweet baby.
You're moving so carefully, let's start living dangerously.
Whoa.